From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Paired, Minneapolis. This is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development.
I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy, I too make nice games.
For this week's episode, our topics are partnering up and control flow. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start.
Minneapolis is paired with St. Paul.
Oh, I get it.
That's not why I did it.
No, but now I'm saying it.
Okay. Uh-huh. I don't know why I picked that. I think I just saw partnering up and was like, paired, sure.
It makes sense. Yeah. And then I thought, like, what are we paired? If Minneapolis is paired, what is it paired with? And clearly paired with St. Paul.
I guess that's true.
They twins.
Yes. I should have waited till the theme song was over. I couldn't. It was too exciting. I had to share that thought.
It is, I think, a lot about how Minneapolis and St. Paul have different histories.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, it wasn't just that, like, they were neighboring cities that both towns that both grew and ended up, you know, they didn't subsume each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's they have different histories with different industries that formed a center. So they have, like, different culture, and it feels different to go around them.
Right.
And they literally border each other.
And
they're both major American cities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of amazing. And you think about an alternate history where, like, it became one metroplex.
Yeah.
And would that mean that the metro overall would be larger because it'd be a greater sense of gravity?
Yeah.
You know, would it have competed with Chicago in that sense,
mm-hmm.
Both economically and then also just demographically?
Yeah.
Or is the fact that it's the Twin Cities, was that interesting enough, and then the identities of both historically were interesting enough, that prevented both of them from becoming, you know, Sioux Falls size, smaller or something?
Fascinating.
Very interesting.
I don't like that alternate universe. We should destroy it.
But growing up, you don't think it's weird.
Yeah.
It is extremely weird.
Yeah, that's true. It is.
But it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. St. Paul's the coolest, though. That's right. I said it.
I'm just like a sad cousin that doesn't get the family joke anymore.
Yeah.
Aww.
Also, I learned that Duluth is not the third biggest city in Minnesota either.
It's not?
No.
No. Which I just would have guessed. Because it's the third cultural center, at least historically.
Yeah.
Because it's important to the history of the state.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, like, two other cities bigger than it.
Which cities?
Rochester.
Yeah, okay.
And I think Morris, maybe?
Oh, really?
Maybe some. I might be wrong about that.
Okay.
Maybe
Rochester
one other.
Doesn't surprise me. Morris kind of does.
Well, then I'm probably wrong about that. But I would have just...
Yeah, I would
have
thought
it would have been like Duluth. I would have said not far behind St. Paul, but turns out no. But you know, Rochester, the Mayo Clinic is there, so that
there's a lot of international travel through Rochester, so it makes sense that it'd be more.
So it grew faster because not just the Mayo, but all the industry adjacent to it grew up there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that does right. Yeah. Anyway, this is all very interesting local flavor.
Yeah.
It's the first roundtable of the year.
Uh-huh.
So that means we are allowed and, in fact, required to waste a little time up
top. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do that anyway, but we're going to do it again because we can. Y'all pick these topics. I don't know what they have to do with games, really. So explain, I guess, starting with you, Ellen.
Well, okay, so, I mean, like, we can just start my section.
Yeah.
And
then
we can have Mark... We have a different way that we want to approach Mark's topic.
Okay.
So my topic is partnering up. And what I mean by that is, like, working closely with another person or, like, a small group of people for an important project, like, you know, building a game, obviously.
Right.
Or building a studio.
Okay.
Right. So the mystery of what the topic was is perhaps not part of why it wasn't your intent to introduce this brand crazy new idea.
No.
You just want to talk about this thing that a lot of us deal with.
Yeah. I mean, yes. And I just want to kind of talk about it for a while.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there are lots of, like, things out there. There's one really good book that I recommend called Click.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called, like, Click, The Magic of Instant Connection or something like that. And it talks about, like, some of these very famous partnerships throughout history, especially, like, in the tech, you know, in the world of tech. So, like, Steve Jobs and what was the other guy's name?
Woz.
And Woz.
Mm-hmm.
Wozniak. Yep.
Yep.
So it's one example.
Yeah. A couple of less famous ones, but no less important, are, like, you know, Bill Gates and the other guy.
So we just think of some famous people and then choose the other guys.
Yeah.
A lot of times the partner becomes not famous, but then there are a few examples where they both become equally or about as famous. And then the partnership becomes famous.
Yeah.
But a lot of really, you know, successful people had partners, if not equal partners, along the way, more than you might guess.
Yeah.
Right. So this book is
Paul Allen was his name.
Right.
He owns a basketball team now, I think.
Yeah. I think he'd invest in like a sport based on puffs of air.
Let's put together a pitch document and see if we can get it.
All right. So that book talks about like, okay, what makes some working relationships click? Mm. What makes you click with certain people in different contexts?
Yeah.
So it is a really interesting book if you want to listen to this podcast and you're like, I need more content about partnerships. Mm-hmm. You can read that book. Mm-hmm. But really what I wanted to talk about just with us was like the interpersonal aspects, mainly. So like, why is it important? What does it do? What do you look for? When should you draw back?
Yeah.
But I do want to point out that there are other aspects of partnership that are worth digging into if you are really looking into it. So like, obviously the legal considerations of creating partnerships are one thing. Right. But there's also like diversity and inclusion and scaling and some other things. Mm-hmm. So like there's more to dig into when it comes to actually like formalizing a partnership and really thinking about how you want to, you know, find partners and approach that and mm-hmm. set it up. We're just going to talk about the drama stuff, the interpersonal aspects.
Sweet.
Cool.
Yeah. So maybe we'll dig into some of those other things later on this year.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, I want to just talk about the people side of it. So partnership, why is it important? And what do you guys think? Why is it important?
You're asking us.
Yes, let's start with that. Why is partnership important?
Well, because it's difficult to do one thing by yourself mm-hmm. in certain cases if you don't have the skills or knowledge or don't want to. And it's more helpful to, you know, it's somebody can help shoulder some of the burden.
So like division of labor is what you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The saying is if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's sometimes the finding the balance of that is sort of difficult. But yeah, definitely the things you want to do, places you want to get to are you just need help.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's just practical. Like I only have so much time. If only there was someone else who had some time too.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that's not really the right way to approach it because you also need to share vision. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And now that's different partnerships work different ways. They divide things, and sometimes you have this incredible partnerships, which I think a lot of us would be jealous of, where people just have their own domains that never intersect.
Yeah.
But then they pair. I think that's extremely rare.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other reason, perhaps less heralded but well understood, is that a partnership means that not only will you be able to do more, but what you do will be better.
Yes.
Like, because you know, no matter how clever or creative you are, no matter how amazing your ideas are, like they benefit through a more complicated lens that a partner can provide. And whether that means that they contribute half of the vision or whether that means that they contribute half of the adjustments to the vision you brought to, you know what I mean? That, I think, is important. And I think that's the hardest part is not just doing the work or even dividing the labor, but like, you know, but sharing the vision.
Yeah.
Hmm. Right?
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Because there's no one model to follow.
Right.
That's true. I think that makes sense. I think division of labor is one aspect of partnership. And I also think, and this is kind of what I'm going to say, it kind of resonated with what you were just saying, Mark, is that it's about sharing a vision. And I would also say that like, you have different minds and different experiences. And so you're kind of resonating with different parts of the world in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that gets your vision to be expressed in like a wider range of sound, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think if you can find a harmony and a tuning that works, then like it will expand what you can do. Together.
Yeah. So to extend your sort of sound metaphor, like you may be a great saxophonist and you may not be interested in a second saxophonist. If you want to be louder, maybe, but having someone play the trombone with you means that your saxophone music will be better.
Yeah. Or whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah,
maybe,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe your vision is nothing but saxophones forever. Yeah. But like.
But I think the core of my point is like it is really about like. Understanding that it isn't always just the labor, it's actually the thing is shared with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is never going to be that you have the same idea.
Right.
And that's what makes it strong.
Mm-hmm.
It's that it's going to be different, and that harmony, that intersection is why you should seek a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The labor stuff is like the side benefit rather than the principal benefit, I would think.
Yeah, well, I think that's interesting. It's an interesting point because, like...
That's interesting.
Go
ahead.
Go first.
Because that's definitely not how I see it.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's an aspirational way of putting it, but I think ultimately it's true. Practically, it's not actionable.
Well, I mean, I definitely agree with you, like, having another point of view, another person helping you propel this project or what have you forward is extremely valuable. And I agree with you that, like, that is a significant benefit of partnership. But I guess that's not how, when I'm approaching a partnership, that's not how I'm approaching it.
Okay.
I'm thinking, I don't want to do art. Someone help me do it. You know? And so when I do that, I'm sacrificing a part of what, maybe sacrifice is the wrong word because it is a partnership.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the vision that I have is being molded and changed by this other person working with me.
Yeah. Well, we're not really saying different things.
No, we're not. No. Yeah. I guess the what we prioritize is different, perhaps. But, like, we're saying the same thing.
I guess there may be, and this could be a totally separate episode as well, but, like, is there a difference between, like, you know, delegating to, like, an employee, like someone that you're hiring as a contractor to fill a specific need versus partnering on a vision?
Oh, absolutely.
I think there is a difference,
yeah.
The relationship is different. I guess I hadn't really thought about that going into the list of questions that I had.
Okay.
But we can keep exploring that as we go and answer more questions.
Yeah.
So, like, next question is, so we talked about why it's important. So we kind of started going into this next space, which is, like, what qualities should you look for in a partner?
Right.
Oh.
What qualities should anyone look for in a partner?
Yeah, I mean...
What makes someone good at being a partner, independent of the project or working style?
Yeah,
I mean,
we could approach it from that angle first, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because I don't have an answer to that.
Oh. Steven?
I think it just depends on you. Because, like, just taking myself, I might not necessarily compliment another person's working style or vision or what have you. And it's not because like I'm a bad worker or this other person's a bad worker or anything like that. It's just that something doesn't mesh. So I think it's kind of difficult to answer that question, mostly because, like, everybody is different and requires different things.
Yeah.
Like, I guess, like, for instance, me and my brother, right? We argue all the time. We can get stuff done when we need to get stuff done. And we're actually not that terrible working together. I know that's the gag. But so we complement each other in a lot of ways. And I think part of that is just due to the fact that we know each other very well.
Yeah.
I don't even necessarily think it's we complement working styles. I think we just know each other well enough to, like, be able to make decisions together. And we've had conversations and stuff about things long enough that we can have serious conversations to solve problems. Whereas maybe you're working with a stranger and you are great separately, but, like, you just aren't able to connect with communication-wise in a way that, like, makes it difficult for you to actually get things done together. And so, like, you might have to work differently in order to get that to work, or it just doesn't work out and you have to partner with somebody else. I think that, like, I don't know. I think it just is very dependent on who you are and what you're looking for.
It's why a lot of the famous examples of successful partnerships in commercial spaces are people who knew each other when they were young. Or who started learning a lot of things together, even if they were very different.
Right.
There's differing opinions on, I think, the two famous partnerships that seem to go against the grain of, like, of being friends with someone is Penn and Teller, the comedians.
Oh, yeah.
The magicians. They are not personal friends, and they never have been.
Oh, I didn't
really?
That's, like, a thing they talk about. Like, they don't go to dinner. They're just not friends.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother them.
Yeah.
Because they have such respect for each other.
The Mythbusters.
But they came out. And that's the other one. And it's the same story, basically, is they have such respect for each other,
right,
but just not a lot of interest in, like, hanging out.
Yeah.
And that seems so weird, but, like, that's an interesting way to, like, compartmentalize that stuff. And what I think it reinforces what you're describing, which is that it isn't so much that knowing someone and getting along with them and, like, is a friendship.
Right.
It can be a work relationship, but it still can require, and why these examples tend to be people who started when they were young or came up together, is because it gave them the opportunity to know each other. Now, the context of that can be different. It could be that we never grew past a professional relationship. We realized we didn't like any of the same things or even each other that much, but, like, we work so, you know what I mean? Like, or it could be just, like, we are best friends and let's be roommates and then also start a company together or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, both of those are valid, but they both share that kind of thing, which isn't to say you can you need that.
But right.
Like, if you're not 21 anymore, you can't find a partner.
Yeah.
But, like, helps.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it always makes you sad to see folks, like, on Reddit, on the game dev subreddit, like, looking for, like, I would love to, like, partner up with someone on this idea of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, that's hard enough.
Yeah.
But also just, like, man, the road ahead to make that practical for anyone you work with
mm-hmm.
is really tough.
Yeah.
Because it is, you know, you miss out on all of that benefit of doing it naturally.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and
well,
so.
And doing it together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you already kind of set it up to, by that phrase, like, this idea of mine, I want you to partner up with me.
Right.
Wait.
I think that's like a level of maturity that a lot of people have to move past. And I think even if you know in your heart that you are going to have to share some of your vision,
yeah.
I think it's hard for people to actually do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Agree with that.
Yeah. And I will say, and I've talked about this on the show before, but like, as someone who likes to put my finger in every pie
mm-hmm.
and learn things I don't know,
mm-hmm.
like, it's a thing I have to remind myself a lot, because sometimes I do feel capable of doing things that are outside. But like, that every time I've done something where I have sort of taken it all on,
yeah.
I always look back and go, you know what? Like, that was great and things turned out, but it would have been so much better if I did it with someone else or,
yeah.
or with a team or whatever. And independent of its capabilities, but like, it would have been a stronger concept. It would have meshed well together. Like, you think you know how all the parts work together, but
yeah.
like it's amazing how much more robust a concept can be when multiple people are involved in it,
right?
And even if they're not even great at communicating, it's just like a weird,
yeah.
it's a weird counterintuitive thought.
Well, because sometimes it's just nice to have somebody to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah,
you know?
It's how those things develop.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. They can stagnate just
yeah.
in your own mind.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, this is not a game development partnership. Although sometimes I run game development ideas by him. But, like, Eric's a really good thought partner
yeah,
for lots
yeah.
of different things. So, like, you know, hey, I was like, hey, I'm thinking about this. And this has taken a while for us to, like, work into this pattern because his brain works so fast that sometimes, like, for a while I would be like, I'm thinking about this. And he'd be like, blah, 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 blah. And I'd be like, I can't take it all. Ah.
yeah.
But now that we understand more about like how we think differently,
mm-hmm.
And which ways we think the same, we're much better at it. So I'll be like, I'm thinking about this, and I don't know whether it's going to be this. Help me think through it, and he will just jump right in and help poke holes in it and point me in a different direction. And it's always super helpful.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I mean, it's just I am like what 37 now. Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it's taken a while to learn mm-hmm. about, like, to learn how I partner well with others.
Yeah.
And what I'm good at. And I'm still, like, honing those skills.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you're out there and you're like, I don't know how to partner with people, and it's fine. It's complicated, so it takes a while.
Yeah.
And you are a human, so you are also complicated.
I mean, that's a question in and of itself.
How are you human?
No. How do you partner with other people? I am human.
Okay. Well, not you specifically.
I know,
yes,
but yeah.
The listener.
I think, well, because like it's one thing to be like, who should you partner with? But it's another thing to be like, what do you bring to the table?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting question. Because I oftentimes when I think about partnering, I do think of it in terms of skills. And specifically that's because there are certain things I'm not interested in learning
mm-hmm.
or I can't do by myself. And so, like, I would need to partner up with an artist or what have you in order to do a thing. But it's not always – that's not always the case. Like, sometimes – what if I wanted to do the art, right? And I felt inspired. This is some beyond – I don't know when this is going to happen. But let's say I wanted to do the art and stuff, and I could do all the things that I wanted to do with this game. Actually, maybe the game doesn't need art. But I wanted to partner up with somebody else because – I didn't feel confident in my own, not in my own abilities, I guess, but I felt like that, like Mark was saying, I feel like the game could be stronger if I had somebody else helping me do it. And specifically not, but if you're partnering with somebody, you know, it's not just they're helping you do a thing. You're not contracting this person and they're just doing the thing that you tell them to do, right? They are influencing this idea, this thing, this vision.
Yeah.
So what is it that you're bringing to make this partnership work?
Yeah.
I think it's a very important question.
Right. And it may be that different people within the partnership
yeah.
have different things they want to get out of it.
Yes.
That may lead to conflict. It may lead to synergy.
Right.
right?
Yeah.
Mm.
It's kind of, it's another, like, the reason I was asking at the beginning, like, is, are there things you'd look in for, that anyone would look for in any partner?
Mm.
And I'd have a hard time coming up with any one quality because, like, I think, like, when I've been in, like, a team situation,
yeah,
and I want somebody's opinion on something, I kind of don't care if they're an expert on that thing.
Yeah, sure.
Like, and that's my bias as someone who is multidisciplinary.
Yeah.
That I'm not that interested in someone's expert opinion,
yeah,
on something. I'm much more interested in somebody's general opinion.
Yeah.
And so, like, I would always ask the copywriters when I was working at an ad firm, I'd always ask them what they thought of the animation.
Yeah.
Because that felt more valuable to me than asking an art director.
Okay.
And part of that is because I could evaluate it the same way they could.
Yeah.
And so, but at the same time, that makes me a good partner in some cases. It might make me a good leader in some cases, but it would also make me a miserable partner to certain types of people.
Right.
And there are definitely partnerships that are advantaged by people not doing a lot of communicating.
Yeah.
And leaving it all to trust.
Oh, gosh. I love that because, like, that's one of the things that me and my brother have an issue with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is, like, my brother will – I think partly because I'm the older brother. I want to say that he looks up to me, but that's probably not true because the man owns a house and I don't.
That house has snakes in it.
That's fair.
Yeah. He owns snakes, too.
Yeah, see?
Oh, I like that reframing.
But I feel like oftentimes when we're working together, my brother will ask me opinions on things that I don't care about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I it's not even necessarily that, like, I'm not interested in what he's doing. It's that, like, he'll get really specific about a thing that I just can't bring my level of interest to match him. Right?
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I think that we sometimes will struggle with that. And I'll just be like, you do whatever. And that's not, he wants guidance. He's looking for guidance. Not like I can, he's just looking for a direction, I guess. And I can't give him that in certain cases.
I'm a little like him in that sense.
Yeah.
Maybe not the same way, but I think it's sometimes it's guidance. Sometimes it's like certification.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Right? It's not validation necessarily.
Yeah.
It's like, I had this idea. I'm confident in it. But, like, I don't have the confidence to execute unless I get buy-in from everyone else.
Yeah.
And no one else seems to care.
Yeah.
So I feel no less confident going forward.
Yeah.
I've been in that situation. I guess that might be some of what that those interactions
possibly,
are about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that is, it is interesting. Some people want to have the, let's bounce it around the room until we're all forming consensus. And then sometimes a better team or a better partnership is like, I trust you know what you're doing.
Right.
If I have a complaint, you'll hear it when the time is right.
Yeah.
You know, and people have to give each other long leashes.
Yeah.
And so I think, it just means that there's no universal qualities,
right.
I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, there wouldn't be, right? I mean, I think communication
mm-hmm.
and self-knowledge
and
acceptance of differences are probably the only three universals that I can think of.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you're not going to be good at all three of them in equal amounts at any given time. And mm-hmm. in different contexts, you'll be good at some of them and worse at others. And But those are the only three ones I can think of that would be, like, across the board good. And the thing is, like, some of those things can also have that imbalance. Like, if you have one person who's just a really good communicator, then, you know, maybe you can have someone else who isn't. Because some of that communication burden will be shouldered by the person who's more talented and more experienced at it. Is that fair? That's not for anyone else to decide. Like, the people involved in that partnership have to decide.
Right, yeah.
And that's a really interesting framing because a lot of times those things are mechanized in, like, job descriptions in offices.
Mm-hmm.
People shoulder that burden because it's part of their job description and people don't because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And within an equal partnership or a less formalized relationships, those things need to be, like, navigated sort of within that group.
Yeah.
Which is harder. Because also you need, like, if your job is to do a thing, like, then you're just going to do it. Like, But if the thing is needed and it's nobody's job, then who's the one who's going to be best at it, who's going to be able to be most efficient at it,
mm-hmm.
who's going to be able to spare the energy to do it.
Yeah.
And to be most effective taking that. That's not something you can, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, figure out on a spreadsheet.
No, I mean, you can try to document it in a spreadsheet. So, like, well, here's an example from the workday. So I am, like, leading up this team.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned this a couple episodes ago. I know I did because it was just earlier today when we recorded it. But it's very, like, very talented high-performing people. All the people on my team have a lot of experience in the field.
Yeah.
They've proven themselves on many different projects, often with many different companies. Some of those companies are, like, the big ones.
Yeah.
And so, like, they know how to be organized. They know how to be action. They know how to take action on things. They know how to take initiative. They don't need hand-holding at all. And so, really, what I'm seeing my role is, like, keeping an eye on the whole system and, like, bringing questions to the team so they can problem solve together and really build their own systems.
Yeah.
But also just, like, okay, if there's – I can see that this thing right now is impeding one of my people, I'm going to go after it and solve it right now.
Yeah.
So we don't have a team admin right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, like, I would expect our team admin to take lots of notes when that – when, like, they do start.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many other different note-taking tools these days. But – we, for security reasons, for a customer, we were on a call today and we couldn't record, which means all of our, like, note-taking apps weren't there.
Yeah.
And we rely on those a lot because, like, these are complicated projects sometimes.
Right,
and this is one of those ones that was going to be complicated. So I just messaged the other strategist who was on the call with me and I said, I'm going to take notes. You take the lead. We already talked about that ahead of time, that he was going to take the lead on the call. And so I just took notes.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
It's not in my job description explicitly, but, like, making sure the team has what they need is, and that just fell under that.
Yeah.
So I did it.
I would push back a little bit because I don't think we're disagreeing necessarily.
No, I wasn't trying to disagree.
No, but I think, like, the thing you did wasn't in your job description, but it was in service of what your job description was.
I see, okay.
Right? If your job wasn't to facilitate that final result, you may have just because you're Ellen and who's going to stop you, but...
yeah,
but do you know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't have been your responsibility to solve that problem through whatever means.
Sure.
And so when you are in a situation where those things are more amorphous, the kind of figuring out that you do is what everything has to be handled that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not always
a
what's my role here kind of thing. There's not always a great answer to that all the time. You
right,
know?
Right. My
particularly
role is
if
always...
it's not. Someone comes in, I'm like, I'm going to be the, I do this part of the project, someone does this part of the project. Well, that's 2% of the project.
Right.
Like, combined. So there's all the other things that you haven't figured out yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess, like, that is one way of looking at the role that I have now is work on fixing the biggest gap.
Yeah, yeah. And that's probably why you're well-suited and why they sought you out.
Maybe.
Is because you're able to sort of interpret that, like, ultimate goal, and you're able to apply different things to it, right? You're able to be that kind of flexibility. But it is always in service of a very clearly defined roles and responsibilities.
Sure.
If not tasks and, you know, workflows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe most partnerships benefit from that level of flexibility, but maybe some don't. So I can see what you're saying that, like, you know... Wait, what were you saying?
I don't know.
I'm sure I agreed with you mostly.
Yeah, I think I'm with you as well, I
okay.
suspect.
Just listen back, I guess.
It's getting late. Okay, so we talked a little bit about managing disagreements and creative differences, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't want to take up all of the hour of our episode because I really want to hear about control flow. But I am curious about what you think about this next question.
Okay.
What signs might indicate that it's time to end a partnership?
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm good at that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's fair.
Same.
Honestly, I'm getting better.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't to say I have, like, a litany of failed partnerships in my history.
No.
But I feel like I actually don't have a lot of experience winding down big projects.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say I have a lot of wisdom to impart on that.
Hmm.
I guess I feel the same. But I think if you're just looking for signs as to what when a partnership isn't working out, that's a very good question. I think you'll start losing drive for on the work, right? Because part of that reason, and it might be difficult to recognize it in the middle of it, but part of that reason might be that you're working with this person and you're not excited about working with this person anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so to compare it to like personal relationships,
yes,
marriages and so forth.
Right.
I think that might be why it's probably easier to frame it in a sense of, like, yeah, you don't want to work with this person anymore, which is kind of just sounds like you map that to, I don't want to live with this person anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas if a project fails, that's a natural end to a partnership.
Yes.
Whereas a personal relationship doesn't have a project necessarily.
Right.
I mean, you'll have
some... The project is the relationship.
Right. You'll have, definitely, that language is often used in, like, couples therapy and stuff, mm-hmm. right? but it's not it, people don't really see it that way very frequently.
Yeah.
Whereas in other types of partnerships, there tends to be other forces which kind of will tell you that pretty clearly. Like, oh, this thing is done. Either we shipped it and we just don't want to work together on the next thing,
yeah.
in which case it's kind of like you just don't keep it going. Mm-hmm. Or this thing fell apart. And I guess we'll just tidy it up and then move on with our lives.
I mean, I see where you're coming from, but I think that a partnership can be the reason why something failed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just think that in that case, that's like maybe that's closer in relationship to personal relationships.
Yeah.
In the same thing, less to do with this specific scenario.
Yeah.
And probably why it's harder to kind of define it. I guess.
Well, I guess that is that the question you're asking, Ellen? Is that like, you know, if you're recognizing that this project is in decline due to the fact that like your relationship with your partner is not working. It's not able,
right.
You're not able to continue with
it. Is it this partnership is not doing good at our task?
Yes.
Or is it this task should not be completed by this partnership?
Yeah.
I think interesting that like, oh, the project is over. It ended. We shipped the thing. That, I guess, is a sign that you should end the partnership.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's an easy one.
But not always negative signs. Yeah.
Well, it's an exit ramp, right?
Yeah.
It gives you the option.
Yeah.
But,
like, you know, for someone, a couple people who went into business together,
right.
They bought, like a cafe or something,
mm-hmm.
and they pooled their resources and went for it, and or they had a third partner that brought the money, and the other two brought, like, the skills and the...
Yeah.
And, you know, one person brought the skills, and one person brought the money, and the other person brought, like, the human capital, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if one of them wants out, then they got to negotiate that.
Right. There's, like, legal mechanisms for that sort of thing.
Right.
Which is different from other types of relationships.
Yeah.
But even that can drag out through, like, interpersonal drama rather than it just being, like, everyone knows what needs to happen.
Yeah.
Somebody got out a checkbook and just buy the third... That or whatever,
yeah.
but like that
yeah.
that can drag out stories of that sort of thing, just like not settling amicably, even if there aren't any core disagreements on those terms. It's about the personal relationships
mm-hmm.
that
yeah.
sort of gets that
mm-hmm.
makes that messy.
It can,
yeah,
even though we weren't gonna like that. That's a whole separate episode, I think. But I mean, I think if you're not happy, right? If you don't like you said it, Stephen. If you don't want to show up there anymore, that's kind of a sign.
And that's the thing, though, right? Is it's difficult to really know why that's the case, because maybe there's just a bunch of stuff happening in your life and you're just sick of working because you can't really spend the bandwidth to work on that
mm-hmm.
thing. It might not have anything to do with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Recognize that you're not being a good partner.
That could be part of it too.
Be a personal failing, but there might be other reasons.
And so like it might not necessarily be the partnership, frankly. It might just be that like like you were saying, Mark, earlier, like it might be that this partnership is not good at this particular project.
Yeah.
And so like this partnership can do something else, you know? Like me and Charles are great at when we're in a competitive competitive team together against other people, we do really well. But we might not work well if we wanted to build a house together. That would be terrible.
I'd watch that show.
For sure. It's kind of like a different Two Brothers on HGTV or whatever.
Yeah. That would only run one season. We might not survive it.
The most replayed season of Two Brothers.
The trailers would be like, see how it all ended.
What is that HGTV show? I got to look this up.
There is the Twin Brothers.
Is it called
Two
Brothers?
Probably. I don't know.
But
I guess, yeah, I think that like... I guess what I was trying to say, though, is ultimately it's not always easy to recognize when something is wrong with the partnership specifically.
Yeah.
It's easy to make excuses.
Mm-hmm. And, you know,
yeah.
I mean, my general opinion of humanity is that most people are good. And
right.
So people are willing to sacrifice a lot
before
they realize. And sometimes that's a mistake, right?
Yeah. I think that's the sign is resentment.
Yeah.
You start feeling resentment for something. That's when it's time to let go.
Oh, I have a pretty good example that touches right on that. So I used to work at an animation studio called Puny.
Yes.
And we had a really, really very difficult boss at that company. That's not a secret for folks who worked there.
Mm-hmm.
And she shut down the company and then hired us all back as freelancers.
Okay.
And none of us were happy about that because it wasn't what we were planning for our careers.
Right.
And it didn't give us enough freedom to do other work. So that
mm-hmm.
was frustrating and no one liked that.
Yeah.
But we had a big project that we were on, and so I came back for just that project.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I couldn't go home and tell Dale what happened that day.
Oh.
And as soon as I recognized that I wasn't to do that, the next day I quit.
Oh. Okay.
And so because I was building up that resentment, felt like I could power through the rest of this thing.
Yeah.
And the work was interesting. And the people that I was working with mostly, I still really admired.
Yeah.
And I wanted to support them in the struggle that we were having with these sort of difficult circumstances of the project. But at a certain point, I was like, I could have missed it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I could have gone on for another couple months or whatever.
Yeah.
But I felt that moment was very clarifying.
Yeah.
Not everyone gets those
You're
moments.
Not always going to have that moment, right? Yeah. Right, exactly.
But it's related to that. That's what it was. It was just feeling like I had thoughts I couldn't express because it felt like I didn't want to express that kind of thing because it felt wrong. And you're like, well, why? I'm very open and I don't keep secrets from Dale. Mm-hmm. So like the moment I don't want to tell her something, that something must be really, really wrong.
Yeah.
So
that's a great example. I love that. Yeah. So like it's not always clear, but I think there's. I think it's helpful to just be cognizant of how you're feeling, be aware and present.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's the hard. You know, I'm still working on that mess.
Yeah,
that's what therapy's for. It helps you get through some of that.
Yeah,
or figure that out.
It helps you learn about yourself.
So it does. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then you know what you want and what you need, or have a better understanding of it.
Yeah,
and how that can change and things. So yeah.
All right, that was relationship therapy with Nice Games Club.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't. I mean, it is relevant to games, right? Everybody, we all, you know, partnerships and
stuff.
Well,
such, I mean, you have this last question we haven't gotten to, which is just like, is there a way you can part amicably? Like, what tools can you equip yourself with?
Yeah.
How can you prepare?
Yeah.
I don't have great answers for that, but it's definitely something you should think about as you start a partnership.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a good point. You know, help think about what are the risks.
Mm-hmm.
And under what circumstances do you know, like, it's time to split? And I think also, like, when you know what you're bringing to a partnership and what you need, and you can be transparent about those things up front, then it becomes an easier conversation. You're like, hey, I really want this project to succeed, but it's just not for me right now. I can't show up the way that the project needs. And so I'm going to step away, but I'm going to help do this. I'm going to find you someone who has this.
Yeah.
What else do you need? You know, like...
There's the emotional equivalent of the 2-week notice, right?
Mm.
You know, make sure that you leave things, you know, hopefully not to make further sacrifices of your own, but if you can leave before it gets to the point where that would be an extra burden on you, then like that's definitely a good way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly for longtime listeners, you know, a founding Clubhouse member, Martha McGarry,
mm-hmm.
our super pal,
mm-hmm.
at one point she decided that she couldn't do the show anymore.
Yeah.
We sat down and we made, Stephen, you and I made sure, like, she was very cognizant of, like, feeling like that we would be upset about that.
Yeah.
And we all, because we were such a good team from the start,
mm-hmm.
that we're like, well, if this is a problem for you, then it's a problem for us.
Right.
And let's solve it together.
Yeah.
And at that meeting, we all agreed, let's get Ellen.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
like,
we did.
All three of us decided to approach you.
Yeah.
And so that, like... Oh. So, you know, and that was a pretty clumsy process. We didn't plan for that.
Right.
But, like, you know, it helps that the partnership was strong enough that when it wasn't working for one of us, we handled the transition when we could. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think Martha can speak for herself on that. But, you know, when she came back for the 2000th or 200th, we talked about, like, that transition process. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm proud of her and I'm proud of us for, like, making that work. Because we didn't do a lot of planning for what a situation like that would look like.
Right.
You know, and it's tough
to
do those sorts of things with you know, people you grow really close to
right.
and projects you really are really invested in.
Yeah.
But if you know, if you can't make it work anymore but you still want it to succeed, you know, just that emotional openness is maybe more important than the logistical planning.
Yeah.
I mean, do both if you can manage.
Well, yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks, partners. Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, listeners. It's been a while. I know there were some questions in the Discord about when we'd be back. We're back now.
Yeah, stop asking.
I know, dang. But actually, though, use the Discord more.
Ask other things.
Yeah, ask us some other questions. So this is the third episode since we've been back on from hiatus.
Yeah.
And like, I'm really excited actually to hear what people's thoughts are specifically about this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're kind of, I mean, this stuff isn't particularly like super heavy, but it's interesting in wide range of partnerships And I'm curious, like, people's thoughts on that kind of stuff, right? Yeah. So, like, I would like to hear people's thoughts in our Discord. If you go to nicegames.club/discord, you can join us and you can join the community in talking about these kinds of things. And also, you know, previous episodes. If there is a particular episode that you heard over hiatus that you really wanted to talk about, now's the time to do it because people are coming back in. You know, we're super popular now.
Well, one thing I appreciate about our Discord community is it's not so large that if you wanted to just pop in and guide the conversation, you can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And the thing is everybody in there, even if they're in the middle of talking about something else, like, they're very open to whatever you have to say. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that's a quality of the type of person who would listen to a show like ours.
Yeah.
I won't take any credit for us engendering that attitude. I think it's the people who, like us, are the people who are there to hear what other people have to say.
Yes.
So if you're the type of person who joins a community as a lurker and that's valuable to you, go ahead and join the Discord and lurk away. But if you're the kind of person who you know, has something to say and maybe doesn't always have the venue to say it, nicegames.club/discord, that's for you.
Mm-hmm. Come say your nice things.
Must be nice. Only rule.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you can define whatever that means for you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, Steven?
Yes.
What do you think control flow is? I want to hear from you first, and then I have ideas.
Okay. Well, all right. Okay, so when I hear control flow, I think of a class I failed when I was studying for mechanical engineering.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about this for 20 minutes.
No, we don't. I don't want to do that. But I do distinctly remember taking classes on, like, fluid mechanics.
Yeah.
I specifically think I failed that class, like, 2 times.
Isn't it, exceptionally difficult?
I mean, yeah. Mechanical engineering, at the U in particular, is really hard. Mm. Yeah. So, like, it's not surprising that I flunked. But the reason I flunked is not because it was difficult. It's because I didn't want to do it.
Okay, fair.
Let's be real.
Fair.
Making games is also hard, and I'm still doing that.
Fair enough.
So I guess if I think of it with that, that's how I'm picturing it and imagining it. Control flow, I guess, is... No, it doesn't really track with games. I can't really light it up.
Let's hear what it is.
I guess that's what I'm having a hard time.
You did fail the class.
Right. They tested him on this very definition, and he failed then.
With fluid mechanics, it's like how you have to recognize how much, like, pressure or water is putting on a pipe or something like that when it's flowing through something. Uh-huh. And so, like, I guess it must have something to do with that.
Yeah.
I guess.
Controlling pipes.
Controlling the flow.
Of the fluid in the pipes.
And understanding what pressures that the pipes are experiencing when this water is going through it.
Okay.
And so like, valves liquid. And directions and...
vows.
I mean, some of that, and also just the forces. You need to make sure that the pipe is the right material in order for it to actually work without it just bursting because you picked plastic that you weren't supposed to or whatever.
Too much. It is hard.
Too much.
Yeah.
Too much.
All right, Ellen, what's your theory?
Well, I was thinking for a while, like, medical stuff.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But that really kind of just boils down to fluid.
Getting colder.
Fluid mechanics. No, it's going to get even colder than that,
yeah.
Mark. Yeah. Okay, so that's what I was thinking. It's like, you know, basically the equivalent of what Stephen was just saying, but, like, with organs and medical devices that integrate or
you mean, like, controlling the flow of, like, air
your
in
blood
your lungs or something?
Like, yeah. Yeah, or your you blood, know, yeah. Like, control flow, and it, which, but that still just boils down to the same thing. So,
kind of. Well, from different contexts.
Just different materials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
I suppose that's true.
It's interesting because, so I'll let me explain it.
No, I'm not quite done.
Okay.
Oh.
Then the only thing I had as a backup was like that Enya song, Orinoco Flow.
I'm glad we stopped so you can get that thought out.
I'm sure
really
that's
worth an extra couple seconds.
I'm sure that's not it. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, so I think both of you are fooled by the word flow.
Yes, definitely. Yes.
But it isn't that far off, and you know, listeners who like have heard this vocab, it's not a complicated thing. It's not a mystery.
Sure.
Like our first topic.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a big part of it, but it was interesting to hear because it is sort of a broad. It's a technical thing, but also it's a broad way to think about your code.
Oh.
So control flow is basically just the linear path in which actions occur through your code.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I asked about like valves and stuff, because that's kind of the ifs and whiles all of that stuff.
Oh, okay.
So it's that's all it is. But in games, particularly if you're working with libraries and engines,
mm-hmm.
you don't always know what the control flow of your project is.
Sure, yeah, it's true.
And so I think it's kind of important to think about that. Because it's a bit of a 101 topic, but it's sort of one of those things that scales from your eyes when you start thinking about these things.
Yeah.
So the basic deal is, like, you know, whatever your library or whatever your compiler, wherever your code starts in your main class or whatever, like, it basically just starts from line one and you go down, right?
Right.
And if you're working in basic, you got your go-tos, it's much easier to consider. It's like a thread of actions that happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So ifs and whiles and switches and all that sort of stuff that form the base of most programming languages, they determine where the flow goes as the code as your program progresses. Within a single class or object, this is fairly easy to track.
Yeah.
Right? It is also terribly intuitive, I think. I think for some beginning programmers, it seems so obvious, and some people don't understand it necessarily because code feels like it's not one-dimensional.
Yeah.
But it's kind of one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Right? Now, it gets complicated even when you understand the concept because it's complicated by callbacks and script execution order and multi-threading and async processes and coroutines and things that compete for flow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, tons of games are still single-threaded applications. And there is, in fact, one path predictable through your program. But you, as the developer, too frequently, I think, are not made aware of what that is.
Yeah.
And you have to account for the possibility it might be what you don't expect.
Yeah.
And so that's where you have lots of null checks and lots of checking to see, did this happen yet? Therefore, move on. And if you don't understand how your program is working, then you end up having way too much of that stuff, I would say. And I speak as a person who loves to write verbose code.
Mm-hmm.
I like to put error checks in there. Just for my own understanding of where what the code means, less so that I'm worried the compiler is going to throw an error.
Yeah.
And so I'm speaking as that type of programmer, it is still also, you look through any bit of Unity code, any project that's been going on for a couple of months, and you'll see tons of if not null in places where it's not needed, or where it was needed and now no longer is. Lots, particularly Unity projects, are just loaded with that stuff because it's just, you know, you don't really know. You're not keeping
sometimes
enough track of it.
Yeah.
And these libraries, these frameworks, don't do a great job of exposing that to you.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Unity because I think that's like a specific interesting case with respect to this.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of times you're using those null checks because like there's things in the inspector that you don't know is filled in or not.
Yeah.
And so like that's an aspect of the flow. Like you will get to that point and then the code will be like, does this object have a reference to such and such?
Right.
Oh, it doesn't? Well, I don't know what to do now. And then there's an error, but Unity just ignores the error, which is problematic in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Ellen's making a face.
Well, Unity's overloading of the equals is a whole other
thing. Yeah, for real. And so, like, that's a thing that you have to, like, understand. Where there are other languages that don't do it in that same way. Mm-hmm. Like, specifically, like, if it doesn't have a thing, then the whole game breaks.
Yeah.
But also, like, the checks might happen at the beginning when everything is being compiled. The checks might happen at the start of the script or something instead of when it gets to that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so generally, and this is a framework thing, not a language thing, generally.
Yeah, framework was
but, the if you're a Unity developer and you declare a variable at the class level,
mm-hmm.
you tend to say, this is of a type whatever,
yep.
and then you, and semicolon. You don't,
yeah.
you don't initialize it or create an empty object or even declare it as null
yeah.
because you're going to define it in the inspector,
yeah.
right? And that is a weird, weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is not how programming should work.
Yeah.
Because the first time that thing needs to be referenced in your code, like, if it weren't for the fact that Unity's, like, you know, blanket of, like, taking over how everything works
yeah.
kind of coats your project.
Yeah.
If you were just to look at that code independent and not sort of be an understanding of all the things happening around it, you would look at that and you'd be like, well, you couldn't reference that ever. Because mm-hmm. nowhere in this code is it defined as
right.
anything.
Right.
Ever, ever, ever.
Yeah.
And so that is, we're a little bit off topic, but it's relevant in the sense that Unity in particular, but other engines, and, you know, this is a cost that you pay for all the benefits it has. So right. I don't want to make this a just complainy kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is, in many instances, and maybe there's debate on this, but in many cases, it's worth that confusion.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, that sort of teaches you to kind of think that, like, things just sort of happen somewhere.
Sure.
Because it's not happening in your code.
Right.
Right? And so, as it relates to control flow, you think about, like, well, I'm going to check for this, and it happens in an update loop in some other component on some other object,
yeah.
and I don't know what order it shows up in, because I don't know in which order the game objects are literally put on screen.
Right.
And compared to when the first frame is run. And all of those things are kept hidden from you as a learning Unity developer.
Yeah.
Now, many of these things are discoverable.
Yeah.
You can understand how these things work, but you will forget them, and you'll have to figure it out again. You'll have to refer to documentation. You'll also have to use this magic thing that most people in Unity don't understand, which is a hot tip. In one of the settings tabs is script execution order.
Oh, yeah.
All the callbacks in Unity all run together at the same time. At least if they're in the scene,
mm-hmm.
and you can say which scripts should happen before which other scripts.
Yeah,
and that doesn't mean all their code. It just means for each callback, for each start, all the starts for this should start for all the starts for that. For all the updates for this should start before that.
Yeah,
that's a good way for you to have influence on the control flow to control the control flow.
Yeah,
so you can do less of your null checks. Otherwise, it's non-deterministic.
Yeah.
You don't know when it's going to go, and then the next time you compile it, it could be in another order. Mm-hmm. If you don't explicitly define the script execution order for a lot of your scripts.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you'll go to that page, and you'll see a bunch of like third-party library code already populated in there.
Yeah.
Because those tools understand that they need to define that stuff.
Right.
It's not something you get taught when you're learning Unity for the first time.
True, yes.
I think things may have changed in recent years, but I think it's a surprise to a lot of people.
Yeah, and well, usage... Using that well is something that's not.
And because it's in the UI of the editor,
mm-hmm.
again, totally not something you see in your code.
Right.
So as you're working in your text editor,
yeah.
that is an invisible process.
Yeah.
And that is kind of infuriating to me as the architecture is structured.
Yeah.
It's meant to be easy to use, but as you start using it, once you get past the learning how to use it, then it becomes 10 times more confusing than it should have been.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one of those things you got to think about. And as these libraries and engines allow you to do more complicated programming things like doing proper multi-threading,
mm-hmm.
where they're running at the same time and you can't necessarily even access the context of the thing. It's separate control flows, right?
Yeah.
And you need to be able to, these asynchronous things, you have to wait for one thing to be true before you can move on. You can halt execution of a thread until something happens. But if you do that, and you're not in control of when you might get the result to continue, then why are you multi-threading at all? Because you're just like going back and forth between threads.
Right.
Might as well just be one thread.
Yeah.
And these are things that like are very, very complicated. And I think they're not developers, especially self-learned indie developers, are not given the tools for these things.
Mm.
So this is not something I'm helping you with, but I'm basically just sort of letting you know that the burden is on you.
Yeah.
If you want to do anything a little bit more fancy, you kind of can't just copy and paste from Stack Overflow. It's past that point, I think. Yeah. A lot of things, you can get by doing that, and I recommend it. Mm-hmm. I think you should have more. You should have code in your project you don't understand. No, you will not go to jail for that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not always my style, but, like, I mean, if it works, it works. And that's always been my attitude on other people's projects. Like, you should not feel shame for not totally getting how it works.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, but you should endeavor to understand how it works.
Yeah.
You should never not care how it works. You should be fine not knowing how it works. But that's about it, I think. And so the burden is on you if you want to engage with some of these more complicated things, because once you do understand them, once you get a sense of script execution order and understanding your control flow beyond just the ifs and elses you've got directly in front of your face, you can have a much more present understanding of how your project lives together.
Yeah.
Instead of just a big pile of stuff in a scene, which is kind of how a lot of games are in all sorts of engines. If you come from an old-fashioned programming background where all you're using is a code editor, this kind of stuff is actually kind of hard to miss,
right?
Because it's you're forced to use it, and you can map it all out.
Yeah.
I mean, no doubt people are always, you know, right-clicking a something in their code and finding it elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that's a common thing, but so many libraries and engines, there's a limit to what you can actually see or how far you can trace.
Yep.
The control flow, and you don't know what happens, and things can be black boxed. But sometimes you don't even the ins and outs of that stuff is sometimes not even visible to you.
Yeah.
So understanding that that's true of systems you're using, and then endeavoring to kind of at least have an understanding of where the bounds of what you can understand are, and then getting as much control over it as possible.
Yeah.
Will make you more efficient in the long term. Yeah. It's a bit of an effort, though.
Yeah. I when you bring up a lot of this stuff, I mostly feel like I would find the usage in this with respect to debugging. Because, like, it's helpful to know what things are happening when they're supposed to be happening.
Yeah. That may be the most practical application of this knowledge.
Basically.
And I'm not even thinking about that. but absolutely. Way to bring it home. Because that is the reason you should be, like, thinking more about this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then that's the thing, right? Because, like, I will oftentimes, it's helpful to know when things are happening, and specifically when you don't know when things are happening.
Yeah.
Because, like, you might go through the code, and then it'll go through this plugin that you added in, and you don't fully understand how it works, or some of it's black boxed, or what have you.
Yeah.
And then you can figure out that that's where the bug is, and then you go figure out, you talk to the plugin person, and go fix my code, you know.
Well, and you can also have more confidence to hack together a solution.
Also true. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Fewer null checks because you don't put 7 null checks and see which one flags.
Yeah.
You can explore a little more and find out before doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with brute forcing it, but it's not a long-term solution, especially as a project grows and grows and grows.
Right. And that's part of why you want to understand how the code is running after a while, is because once it starts growing, if you don't have that understanding, it'll be difficult to fix bugs down the line or add new things in the future.
Yeah. Just a practical thing I always recommend is when you get a big third-party library, even a small one, just take a before you start poking around with it, start trying out the examples, just take a look at how it's built.
Yeah.
You don't have to really know. Just look at the arguments and the returns.
Yeah.
And you don't have to, you know, and just kind of get a sense of, like, a broad understanding of that flow through those things, so that when you put things into it, you're not baffled when problems start popping up.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And you can better understand whether it's because you're using it wrong or because there's a bug in it you have to work around or fix, rather than being faced with a problem and then you're so far ahead of yourself that you have to then go back and start tracing through it. And that can feel like a waste of time.
Yeah.
But if you spend some of that time early on, you'll do less of it later and it'll be better spent.
Yeah. Worthwhile.
Sail away, sail away, sail away.
Thanks, Ellen.
Sail away.
Did this make sense to you? Did you understand it?
Some of it.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, that's fair.
Sometimes Enya was just in my head, and I had
I think there's a lot of, like, you can maybe think of it with respect to, like, I mean, it flows with projects, right? Like, somebody has to do a thing, and they got to do that first, and you need to know the order in which these things are happening.
Dependency graphs.
Yeah, right? It's another way of thinking about it. Yeah, it's just a weird word for what it's talking about, but it makes sense.
And it's a unique problem of the modern indie developer, because it didn't always used to be this way. It used to be easier to get a handle on this stuff. Even for big, complicated, you know, naughty projects, you'd usually have more visibility Or you'd be responsible for the knotty complexity.
You mean like knotted?
Yeah.
Not naughty. games used to be naughtier.
I mean, that's kind of also true.
No, actually, one of the things it did remind me of is this idea from Educating Intuition.
Hey.
It's probably from other places, too, but the words that are used in that book are kind learning environments and wicked learning environments.
No.
And kind learning environments are ones where, like, the results of your actions are, like, directly related to your actions.
Yeah, yeah.
And also happen in a time frame that where you can make that connection and actually learn from it, whereas wicked learning environments, like, you make an action and...
That is a great metaphor. We're going to start calling Unity wicked.
A wicked, wicked learning environment.
Wicked execution order.
Right, because it hides a bunch of stuff from you. And so you're like, this thing is happening, and I'm doing this thing to try to change it, and it's not working. And that is a wicked learning
and
environment.
And in both scenarios, you can adapt and work in those environments.
Right.
But you shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sail away, sail away. Sorry.
Oh, my gosh. That's our show. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on social media at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and Star Trek memes. I didn't post it. Reply on the various platforms or email us, contact@nicegames.club.
You love it, though.
It actually is pretty funny. Not gonna lie. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we'll be looking at visual world building with Laura on Underwater. Next week, we'll be looking at visual world building. Oh, my gosh. Next week, we'll be looking at visual world building with Laura Underwater. But that's it for this week.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice. Steven?
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.